Thomas Edison once said, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest their patients in the care of the human frame, in a proper diet, and in the cause and prevention of disease." On today's show, you'll meet some of those doctors of the future who do just as Mr. Edison predicted. Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Today's healthcare system is focused on disease care, which is important, but don't you think that's putting the cart in front of the horse? Most of us are born healthy and well, so why not focus on maintaining health and wellness instead of living life in a way that destroys health? Roland Betts had some issues with his health, and his doctor made a suggestion one day that set him and his wife on a new course.
Angie and I, we love making smoothies in the morning for a variety of reasons. But first, we like it because it gets us going, right?
Yes, and it's good to eat your fruit first.
It's good to eat the fruit first. And we also really like coming up with creative ways to eat foods that we normally wouldn't put in a smoothie, like spinach or kale or sweet potatoes. And today, we're going to do a sweet potato smoothie, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, We didn't normally think about doing this way of eating for a number of years, but we were facing some pretty heavy-duty challenges in our life. I was dealing with irritable bowel. I'd gone into the hospital a number of times. So what did we do, babe? I think I met a doctor that said, "Have you ever considered becoming vegan or getting off of dairy products?" And I said, "No, I've never considered that, because I loved milk. I would go into the refrigerator and I would drink a quart of milk in a day without any problem." So we had a number of problems within our family. One of them was irritable bowel, and the other one was allergies. I worked around horses all my life, and I could not brush horses or toss hay or anything like that, because I'd have to wear a mask and I'd have to have medication. And it had finally gotten to the point of so much medication that...
I was concerned about your liver.
Yeah.
You're ODing on allergy meds. And...
Right. It wasn't working.
No.
And so besides the medication with irritable bowel, I was also dealing with huge stomach cramps.
Doubled over in pain,
vomiting, all those sorts of things that would go on with that. And so being a male, I didn't want to change, right?
No.
Yeah. And it was the last episode. I was at a restaurant. I had a chicken dinner. And
yes.
At that chicken dinner, all of a sudden, I was in severe pain. And it was big enough pain that we were concerned and went into the ER. And
kept you overnight.
And so I said to you, "Angie, we're changing." And as soon as I got home and the doctors could not give us a good prognosis, I said, "Let's go ahead and fast for a week." Restarted the system.
But this time?
No dairy.
Absolutely no dairy. No meat.
Right.
No eggs.
So it took a big event in my life to actually get me to change. And it took my wife to encourage me that it was okay to try something different. That's how it works. This is a great way that we love to start our morning.
And I like pretty glasses.
We like pretty glasses, so it's more of a special occasion. So that every day in Scripture we're told that a joyful heart is like good medicine. And so that kind of goes along with the attitude of feeling good about your day. So cheers, babe. Nice
cheers.
Color. Great way to start off the morning.
You have lots of color in your diet.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that color? That's an antioxidant hit if ever I saw one. What do you look for in a doctor? A clinician with experience in managing sickness and disease who can diagnose what's wrong with you when you're ill? Or perhaps you look for a practice with diagnostic facilities like x-rays, scans and blood tests. And it would be nice to have ancillary services such as physical therapy, a kind of one-stop shop. But what about disease prevention? Do you have a doctor who also works just as hard at keeping you healthy? Who works alongside a team of experts that focus on your risk factors to prevent and reverse disease? Our interview today comes from the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting, where I met a bunch of very unusual doctors who I believe are the primary healthcare providers of the future. But first, the news. In the headlines today, get the dog before the baby, dairy intake linked to prostate cancer, and don't kiss your hedgehog. A study just published in the journal Clinical and Experimental Allergy followed children at high risk for the development of asthma and allergic diseases from birth to 9 years. Sensitisation was measured by blood testing at regular intervals from 1 year of age. Both dog and cat sensitisation were independently associated with increased asthma and hay fever. However, dog exposure from birth was associated with a reduced risk of asthma despite sensitisation. So if you plan to have dogs for your kids, it seems that getting the pooch before the baby may make good sense if allergies run in your family. Dairy products can increase the risk of prostate cancer, according to a new study published in the Journal of Nutrition. For 28 years, researchers tracked data from over 20,000 participants in the Physicians' Health Study. Men who consumed more than 2.5 servings of dairy products a day were at 12% increased risk of prostate cancer compared with those who consumed less than half a serving. Men using skim milk were at increased risk for early stage prostate cancer, and those consuming one glass of whole milk or more doubled their risk for fatal prostate cancer. So men, choose your milk wisely, and remember, there are alternatives to cow's milk. If you have a pet hedgehog, you need to know that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have issued a warning. There have been 20 reported cases of salmonella infections in the past 12 months from intimate contact with hedgehogs. So don't kiss your hedgehog and don't allow it to sleep in your bed. Besides, they don't make the best foot warmers. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Medical News Report. Joining me now on location in Washington, D.C. is Dr. Kristen Kent. As a skilled plastic surgeon, he had a really busy cosmetic surgery practice, helping people to feel better about themselves. But then he went into a new field. I asked him about it. Dr. Kent, thank you for coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've just shifted from plastic surgery. You've put the knife down and you've gone into a new field. What's that?
Well, the new field is lifestyle medicine, and I like to think when my patients ask me what I was doing, I helped them age well on the outside, trying to help them keep them more beautiful and in my town, to helping them age on the inside, trying to make them look better from the inside out and trying to keep them healthy so they can enjoy the things that other things that I did for them.
Mm. So what's the name of your new practice?
It's the Kent Center for Life. And LIFE is an acronym which talks about living, which is the preventative medicine part that I do, inspiration, which is what my health behavior people do, food, F is for food, and that's what my nutritionist does, and then E is for exercise. And so it kind of takes a more global approach to a healthy lifestyle.
So you've established a practice based upon a team. So your patients don't just go and see the doctor. They go to see the team.
That's absolutely true, and traditionally people go to their doctor for a yearly checkup. If you have a little more money, you might go for an executive physical and checkup, but often that leaves out critical things like assessment of someone's nutrition, assessment of their fitness, and then what kind of behaviors they have that lead to their stress and lead to their sleep problems. And so instead of treating and addressing those things with medications, then we try to treat them with lifestyle modification, which we like to say treats the cause and not just treats the symptoms.
So what illness would a patient need to come to see the doctor at your center? Well, or do they need an illness?
Well, they certainly don't need an illness. Unfortunately, human beings tend to need an illness to determine that they need to see a doctor. And so they don't often think about going to a doctor, even a preventative medicine or lifestyle medicine physician, until they have an illness. But on the other hand, the most common reasons why someone is on diabetes medication, someone is wanting to lose some weight, basically people not feeling well. So there's all different reasons why they have come to talk to me about learning new lifestyle ways of treating their illness.
So they come with a willingness to learn, willingness to change. What can they expect for the first appointment? What might they get in that bundle of care?
Well, at first, I just try to talk them about what their interest is, what their needs are, why they chose to come see me. And then over a period of a month, we do biometric testing, we do some lab testing. They might talk to the nutritionist and talk to have a little physical fitness evaluation. And fitness, we think about in the public, is more about how fast can I run or how much weight can I lift. But really, things like balance and flexibility are more important for aging than how much I can lift and how fast I can run. And so we try to give them reasonable habits, things that they would be willing to do. But we first measure those things to see how they're doing. We talk to them about sleep, and we talk to them about stress. And, you know, sometimes obesity and other healthcare problems are directly related to stress. We have to spend time and find out what's really going on in their life that's leading them to make maybe bad habits about the way they eat.
After the break, we have our professional chef to show us how to make an unusually healthy pizza. But first, let's go outside for a few minutes. Oh, what happened?
Oh, I burned myself taking the radiator cap off.
Ooh, just a moment. Here.
What? A weed? I thought you were a real doctor.
I am a real doctor, but real doctors use herbs.
So what? Do you have a crystal ball as well?
No. Did you know Thomas Edison once said, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine."
Oh, really? Oh, wow, the burning is gone.
Great. Now we need to put on some aloe vera. And we'll cover that with a Band-Aid. There you go. Oh, that'll feel so much better.
Oh, I've never heard of using plantain for a burn. Why don't the drug companies use it?
Well, the average cost to get a drug to market is $1.3 billion by the time they do all the testing.
Wow, so there's no way that the drug companies could break even if they sold herbs.
That's right. I could pick it right out of the front yard. But herbs can treat some things that drugs can't.
Like what?
Like the pain of a mild burn with plantain and aloe vera. They do really well.
So if someone wants to learn about herbal remedies, they can read a book or go to a class or something like that?
They could. Or you could just go to a herbalist. And they've been trained in the benefits, the side effects, the dangers, the purity, and the quality control of herbs. So consider your options. Doctor's orders. Welcome to Go Healthy's Kitchen, and today we have Jeremy Dixon. He's a chef and owner of Revive Cafe and the author of Revive Cafe Cookbooks, of which this is a recipe. Jeremy, tell our viewers, what are we cooking today?
Well, this is a garbanzo pizza, also known as a chickpea pizza.
Chickpea pizza. So where do the chickpeas go?
Well, that's what makes the base. Normally a pizza is made with white flour and as a base, and this uses very healthy chickpea or garbanzo flour.
So the base of the pizza is made from chickpea flour.
That's right. Excellent.
So tell us, what are the ingredients?
Well, we want to start with 3 cups of garbanzo or chickpea flour, 3 cups of water, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, half a teaspoon of garlic powder, 2 tablespoons of oil, 1 teaspoon of salt, oil for brushing the tray, 2 medium onions, thinly sliced, 1 teaspoon of oil, 2 cups of pizza or tomato sauce, 4 cups of spinach chopped small, 1/2 red bell pepper sliced thinly, and some olives. Wow. And also some hummus.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a very interesting combination. So tell me, what can I do?
Well, you can make the pizza dough.
Okay.
So we've got 3 cups of chickpea or garbanzo flour. Mm-hmm. It's also sometimes called besan flour or chana flour.
Okay, do I need to add?
Yes, add the salt.
Okay, salt.
And I've got the garlic and onion powder. You can use fresh garlic if you want, but this powder is a nice, easy thing to use. And then we add 3 cups of water, so it's 3 cups of flour to 3 cups of water, which is easy to remember. So I've got some extra water here, because sometimes you need a little extra. So we're just going to start mixing just about 1 cup of water worth, just to get the mixture underway, and this helps it not get so lumpy. You just start off and get it into a bit of a dough.
All right.
So I'll just keep adding some of the other water here. So that's 3 cups of water. Now this mixture will end up being probably a little bit runny than you'd expect, but you've got to trust the recipe. It'll work out. It does look a bit runny, but it does end up setting quite happily.
Okay. And what are you doing over there? You're frying something.
Yep, this is some of the pizza ingredients for the top. So we've got some caramelised onions here. So this is just some onion and a little bit of oil, just heated up and sautéed for about 5 or 10 minutes until it goes nice and soft.
All right.
And that adds amazing sweetness to the pizza.
Now, I don't see you cooking anything else.
No, this is kind of a pizza you have warm. This is not the type of pizza where you have huge amounts of cheese, hot cheese drizzled over it.
Mm.
So it's kind of a warm pizza.
Interesting, huh? Okay, so...
Yep, that's talking about the right consistency.
All right.
So there are a few lumps in there, but that's okay. The lumps will kind of come out, they just seem to disappear.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like a liquidy type of a thing there. Now we need to spray the tray.
Well, that's more like a batter, really. Whoopsie.
Exactly.
Okay, there's some spray.
So spray the tray, or you can use a brush and brush on some oil. So especially the corners, because that's where they tend to stick the most.
Mm-hmm.
And just pour it on. Look at that.
So no kneading in this dough.
No kneading. And again, don't worry about the lumps. They just seem to cook out naturally.
All right.
So then we put that in the oven for around about 15 minutes at 350 degrees Fahrenheit or about 180 degrees Celsius. And it comes out looking like this.
Wow. That's amazing. So you get a bit of shrinkage there.
You do get a little bit of shrinkage, and you can see it kind of, but that gets covered up. And you see it's a really nice kind of firm dough, and it's a really delicious type of bread. You can also use it for dipping or any other kind of bread you want, so it's a really versatile ingredient.
Nice. Now what do we do?
Now we better dress it. So we've got some pasta sauce or some flavoured tomato sauce. I'm just going to just spoon that on. And you're going to need about 2 or 3 cups. And just spread that around for a nice tomato base. Like that. So I created this pizza one night when my friends wanted to go out for horrible, you know, cheesy pizza, so they challenged me to make a healthy one.
Oh, really?
So we made this and they were actually surprisingly impressed. So it's actually quite delicious.
So this was a challenge.
It was.
The Saturday night challenge at Jeremy's house. Now.
So now we've got some caramelised onion and these are a little bit hot, but they'll be okay. That's okay, I've got chef hands, I've toughened up to the rigours of the kitchen. Maybe I'll put that. So just some of these, and these are just nice and sweet and they'll just mingle well with everything. As you can see, you're kind of just putting lumps of things everywhere. It's not perfectly arranged on the pizza.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite nice just to get little wee bites of niceness as you go, so every mouth ends up being different.
Okay.
Just spread that around.
I love interacting with my pizza. Choosing what I'm going to put on. What next?
Okay, spinach.
All right.
So just kind of.
And this is just raw spinach.
Just raw spinach, and it's just been chopped up a little fine. I'm going to throw some of that on. And that just gives beautiful colour, beautiful nutrition, and beautiful freshness. So this is a pizza a lot like one you've probably never had before.
Wow.
We've got some sliced red peppers. Beautiful colour and freshness. Now here's a critical time when you need to decide how you're going to cut the pizza.
Okay.
So we're going to cut it into 12.
Because you've got 12 people coming for dinner.
Exactly. So we're going to go 3 by 4. So we're going to put 12 blobs of hummus
in
a 3x4 pattern, and we're going to cut this into squares at the end.
So I can put an olive on there?
You can put an olive on each one, and these are beautiful big olives, and the olives really contrast well with everything.
Big jumbo olive for your friends, hey?
That's right.
That's a treat. You are a good friend to have, you know? I've decided. So that's very attractive. We're running out of hummus.
Running out of hummus? Oh, that person there will keep.
Yeah, they'll be a bit hungry of hummus.
Exactly. And there you go, that's a chickpea pizza. And it's very versatile. You can change all the ingredients, put your favourite healthy pizza toppings on it. And it's just a great, healthy way to have pizza.
And that's it. You don't put that back in the oven or anything?
No, you don't. That's kind of warm with the base coming out of the oven, or you can have it cold.
And if your kids didn't like the raw, I guess you could just pop it in for just a few minutes and
and
just wilt that spinach a little bit. And
You could make a mushroom pizza, you could wilt the spinach. It's a very versatile, but that just gives you an example of what you can do.
And, wow, that's fascinating. Okay, I'm ready to tuck in. So I'm just going to, I think I'll just tear a corner off here.
So generally you'd cut it into 12 cubes with a knife.
Mm-hmm. But, we'll just have some, it's like a pizza dip, this.
Exactly.
Let's see, I'll have some, got to have a little bit of everything. Did you want to also?
I'll see if I can get in without making too much of a mess of your beautiful studio. Here we go.
Wow, this is looking amazing. I mean, look at that. Who would have thought a raw pizza? Well, here I go. If I die, you'll know it wasn't worth doing. But it's worth doing. That's really nice. And this is a great gluten-free option.
That's right.
For people who are gluten allergic or can't tolerate gluten. Well, thanks, Jeremy. That's great.
No worries. Hope you enjoy it.
What's for dinner tonight? Well, you might want to add something to the menu. A simple green salad. This small addition could make a big difference. You see, recently the Adventist mortality study found that people who ate green salad had lower all-cause mortality. In other words, those who regularly enjoyed raw leafy greens lessened their risk of death. Isn't that reason enough to add a salad to your dinner plans? A green salad is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time to answer the questions that you've sent in by Facebook, phone or text. Jennifer from Louisiana asks, I heard vegetarian diets can cause cancer. Is that true? Well, actually, that information is incorrect. A vegetarian diet has been shown to reduce the risk of cancer. Also, it reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, elevated cholesterol, and it causes people to live longer. There are some conflicting studies out there, including a recent one from Britain that suggests a higher rate of cancer in vegetarians. However, when I lived in Britain, I found that people who didn't eat red meat but continued to eat white meat on a daily basis actually classified themselves as vegetarian, which of course they're not. If that was to occur in a study like this, it might explain why the result came back as being an increased risk of cancer in vegetarians. But the latest data from the Adventist Health Study shows that vegetarianism reduces the risk of a number of cancers. Another caller asked, I have a urinary tract infection with a germ that only two antibiotics will kill. And I'm allergic to one of them, that's penicillin. So my doctor wants me to take vancomycin, but vancomycin costs a lot of money. Is there anything you know that can help me? Well, I would encourage you to treat this particular urinary tract infection with an antibiotic, vancomycin being one, and then work to prevent further urinary tract infections. If you want to try and treat it with alternative means, here are some suggestions that you might want to do. But remember, every one of them is going to cost you money, and so the cost is going to add up. You want to drink 3 to 4 quarts of water a day, along with juice of one lemon in the whole day's water. That is if you don't have heart failure. If you have heart failure, you don't want to drink that much water. Take a high-dose cranberry capsule or a tablet, according to the directions on the packet. You can take Uva Ursi, that's a herb that's said to help treat urine infections. You can use a herbal tincture or a tea. One dose every 4 hours, day and night, if you are treating an infection. Also, remember to take probiotics every day because you want to keep those healthy bacterial flora in your gut. Eliminate all sugar, dried fruit, honey, and other sweeteners from your diet. And remember, cranberry juice has a lot of sugar in it, so don't use the juice, use the concentrated tablets. Take exercise daily to boost your immune system, and take 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C each day in divided doses, because otherwise you're going to get bad diarrhea, and take that for several days while you're treating it. Now, if you want to prevent urinary tract infections, let's say you took your vancomycin, now you want to keep those UTIs at bay, drink 2 or 3 quarts of water every single day. Take a high-dose cranberry tablet before bed every evening. Eat blueberries as often as you can afford to. Take probiotics most days or some live yogurt. Limit your sugar and exercise daily. I want to thank you for those questions. Remember to call anytime and leave your health question for me. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. To text or call from overseas, the number's 301-960-5144. And alternatively, you can go to Go Healthy for Good's Facebook page and leave your question there. Now, let's see what's at the grocer's today. Garlic has been used as both food and medicine in many cultures for thousands of years, dating back to the time of the pyramids. During both world wars, soldiers were given garlic to prevent gangrene. It's loaded with antioxidants, which helps to destroy free radicals. Free radicals contribute to the aging process, to DNA damage, to heart disease and cancer. Garlic's been used to lower blood pressure, cholesterol, cancer, antibiotics, antivirals, and it's anti-inflammatory. Wow! Its pungent odor is due to the large amount of sulfur it contains, and that double sulfur bond gives it a unique property. It absorbs toxins. So remember to include garlic to your lineup of seasonings and make some garlic bread. Bon appetit. For a healthy day, there's nothing like fixing a great breakfast. Watch this.
Many times people just have just plain oatmeal in the morning. But we found that oatmeal really loves to be jazzed up a little bit. One of the nice changes that we found in making the change was to start including natural food items.
Whole foods.
Such as smoothies we'd make, grinding our own grains, making our own milk. All those things were really important to us, not just because of me. Our daughter had allergies too.
She was a stubborn one. She didn't like to not have her milk. We actually had to fool her, and it took a while.
We would actually take the milk carton that said dairy, we'd wash it out, and then we would make our own almond milk, rice milk, soy milk, and we would
did oat milk, I tried different
and
recipes.
Pour it into the carton.
It was a carton that never ran dry. Until finally I said, well, you know, honey, you have been, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't you ever question, wonder why is it not running out? We had to, change all kinds of things because cheese was a big thing that we ate.
A little bit of raisin for some natural sweetener. Our taste buds are all geared towards a lot of spices and a lot of cheeses and that sort of thing. But once actually you get off of that stuff and you take a moment to taste what a vegetable really tastes like or a fruit really tastes like, your palate starts to change over a period of time. It's time consuming to make your own stuff, right? I mean, it takes planning. Because We're making a commitment to a lifestyle change, and that lifestyle includes taking the time to start making things. And whammo, you got a great breakfast with your omega-3s, your potassium, honey to help fight allergies, milk that's good for you rather than dairy milk, and a great way to start the morning, right?
Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Yum, that makes me hungry. What a great start. Today we're talking to Dr. Kristen Kent, who launched the Kent Center for Life in Naples, Florida. The acronym LIFE stands for Living, Inspiration, Food, and Exercise. I asked him what he meant by inspiration.
Well, when they're evaluated by one of my licensed clinical mental health counselors, you might say, then they talk to them about what motivates us in life, what really gives us passion and excitement, and talk to them about barriers. You know, oftentimes I have professionals that come in to see me, accountants and lawyers and other people that are highly successful in what they do, but they've are very disappointed in themselves that they haven't been able to be successful with lifestyle things like their weight and like their medications they're on. And so we dig down a little bit and find the barriers that may be keeping them from accomplishing what they want to accomplish. And then the second part of that is that when they spend time with us over the year, these same counselors turn into coaches, health coaches, and they help the person to, when they run into new things, then they help them to work around those barriers and not to get disappointed in what they're doing and to provide some accountability.
And the F stands for food. What diet do you recommend for your patients?
Well, I would like to say that I believe there may be one best diet, but that would be presumptuous of me to think that would be something everyone would do. And so if a patient comes to me completely open to say, I'll do anything, then I may tell them that, you know, eating whole food, plant-based diet with maybe a few minor modifications might be the ideal and the best way to go. But, you know, there are multiple diets, and again, we don't even like to use the term diet, but multiple ways of eating, multiple lifestyles of eating that can give you health. So Mediterranean-style diet is a good base, and like I say, again, if you take it to a plant-based Mediterranean, it's probably even a little better.
Now, this presumably is not reimbursed. It sounds far too preventive. So do you get any reimbursement for this, or do patients actually have to pay for this?
Definitely patients, for me, end up paying for what they're doing. And I like to say I spent time with cosmetic procedures and patients. Amazingly enough, half my patients were middle-class people, not just wealthy people having cosmetic surgery these days. Appearance is powerful. There are certainly reimbursements available for obesity counseling and treatment. There's some things coming on board for treatment of cardiac disease and diabetes. Dean Ornish's program is getting reimbursed as well. So there are some creative ways to get some reimbursement for some of these things, and I'm looking actively at adding some of that to my practice. But currently I work with people, and I have somewhat of a sliding scale depending on the person's financial ability to pay as well. And so where I live happens to be a place where there are a lot of people that money is not the object, it's health. Right. But for those where money is the object, then we certainly can work with them to help them be healthy.
Give us a nice story. Give us a good result.
Well, probably there's a couple, but let me, there's a gentleman who was an elder in his church and an attorney. He is a soccer referee, just a fabulous individual, a father and a family man, and yet he had a strong history of cardiovascular disease. He had become a type 2 diabetic. He had gout, and he was sitting behind his desk as an attorney 9 months out of the year. The other 3 months he was continuing to sit behind his desk, but he was a soccer ref. And so he would run up and down the field, and increasingly, he was 58, he started noticing a trouble getting up and down the field. And I was a friend of his and was worried that one day his wife was going to call me and tell me that he had dropped dead on kind of like a referee or some of these baseball umpires that have fallen dead on the field. So he came to me and said, I'm ready to do anything. Just help me with what I'm doing. I've tried everything. I've looked on the internet. I've tried the Atkins diet. I've tried everything. And my sugar hasn't been out of control. In fact, if 100 is normal, he had not been below 160 in 9 months. His cholesterol should be under 200, and he had not been under 350 with two statins. And he was on two diabetic medications, and he was on two blood pressure medications. And so I said, well, would you do anything? And he said, yes. And so I showed him a diet that reverses heart disease. And he said, I'm going to do this. And less than 48 hours later, he texts me one night about 11 o'clock at night and says, my blood sugar has not been above 100 in all day long. And now 9 months later, his blood sugar has not been above 100. He has been taken off of one of his two diabetes medications. He has been taken off of one of his two cholesterol medications. And his cholesterol is now 145 instead of 345. he's been taken off of one of his blood pressure medications. In fact, the blood pressure medication and the diabetes medication, which wasn't working with his previous diet, started working so well that he had low blood sugar, he had low blood pressure, and he couldn't run up and down the field until they lowered his drugs. And so now he tells me this unbelievably fun story that in the championship game of the soccer at the end of the high school soccer season, he made the crucial call that decided the game. And the people that are over him came and said, "I don't think you would have been able to make that call had you not done this." But 25 pounds and a lot of health later, in a relatively short period of time, about 6 weeks, he went from having trouble getting up and down the field to running up and down the field easily. So it was a really heartwarming thing. And I think most importantly, now we have a father and a fabulous human being that's going to live a little longer to be able to do a lot more for a lot of people because he took care of his own health.
Keep up the good work. It's been great having you on the show today.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Our experts have more to share right after the break. It's time to get into the exercise. Sean, what have you got for us?
I got some resistance bands and keeping it very simple, working together.
Okay. Oh, partner exercises.
Absolutely.
Okay.
A couple different things about partner exercises. It's a great way to get somebody else engaged, especially if you're trying to get someone fit. It's a kind of sneaky way to get them involved in exercise. But just say, come with me, you know, do it with me, right?
Yep.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to back.
All right.
Okay. And we're gonna do a squat. I know Doc is a little bit shorter than me, but we're gonna press your back against mine, okay? And squat down. Go, 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 go! And push against mine, back up. Down again. All the way down, push against mine, and back up. One more time, all the way down. I'm putting all the way down there.
Oh.
And back up, all right? This is a great way to get them used to trusting you, okay? And kind of building that trust.
Yeah. Do you think we should trust him?
I did put a little weight on you.
I'm at his mercy here.
So what we're going to do, the first exercise is a forward lunge using a resistant band. This just adds a little bit more weight, again, at the same time, giving your partner an opportunity to be a part of your exercise experience. There you go. Big lunge. Yeah. Big lunge. The more I pull, the more resistance and the more her quads have to work to go forward.
Okay. And now, your partner will be surprised.
Yep. Then you switch, okay?
Yeah.
Then you switch, okay? So that's a forward lunge using a resistant band. And then I'm going to show you how to do a lateral lunge, right, using the resistant band as well. So this leg stays straight. And all what you do is go to the side, okay? Back here. Back here. Make sure you're breathing, relax. The weight goes all the way in this quad. This leg stays straight and you come back to the center. Mm. Okay? Great way to work that quad.
Yeah. And I didn't get a holiday, you would have noticed.
So you know what we're gonna do next?
Okay.
Let's work some biceps. Everyone loves nice biceps.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So what we're gonna do is use your resistant bands to work biceps together. In 3, 2, and 1, go. There you go, all the way and back. Now, the further you go, of course, the more resistance you get.
Mm.
But this, again, is your sneaky way of getting them used to exercising. So keep it simple, but just increase the time just a little bit more. okay?
And it adds fun to your work.
It does. Talk about something, bring up a topic, put the timer off for a minute, you know? A minute and a half.
We all know Sean's minute.
My minute is like 2 minutes.
His minutes are 2 minutes long.
But think about it. This is a fat burning level right here. It's not pushing your fat, your heart rate up really high. And then you can get to this position right here and have them contract a little bit. The more they contract, the more the muscle starts to recruit fat, put into the bloodstream, and use it as energy.
That's right.
Okay, so be sneaky. There's a purpose behind what you're doing. But you got to get your partner up. You got to get your kids moving.
Yeah.
No, it's just fun.
You do. It's fun.
Very fun. Okay. So what I want you to do is take your right leg, put it over your left. What we're going to do is stretch out your legs. Okay. Since we've worked the legs a little bit on that forward lunge and lateral lunge. And come all the way down. Come all the way back up. Take a nice deep breath. Switch. And back down. This is a great way to stretch out your hamstring, which is right between your legs, your back of your legs, and your glutes, okay?
Yeah.
Stretch makes you prepared for the next exercise, the next day of exercise. So there you go.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
You're very welcome.
Excellent. So get a partner. Don't miss on doing these.
A vegetarian diet can improve your waistline. Can it improve your mood and make you happier? A study of 138 Adventists found that the answer is yes. The individuals following a vegetarian diet had more than 50% less depression and anxiety than the non-vegetarians. And when asked about their general moods, the vegetarians were happier. Less than 1% had mood changes that left them unhappy. Their diet made a difference. A vegetarian diet is linked to happiness and is another ageless advantage.
And we're back with another guest. I also met Dr. Donna Hamilton at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting. A former community pediatrician, she hung up her white coat and stethoscope and launched her own health promotion company called Manifest Excellence. Screen time is often associated with being inactive and disengaging the mind. But as Dr. Hamilton explains, it can be turned for good. Dr. Hamilton, thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, screen time, we often talk about screen time and how it's bad. People sit down and they're not active and they often have other poor health behaviors when they're using screens. But is it all bad?
It doesn't have to be. I mean, you hit the nail on the head about the screen time. When people are doing it, they're mindless. They're usually mindlessly eating and they're still. But if you're doing things with your screen that reminds you to break those habits, then it could be healthy, right?
Well, tell us more.
Yeah, it seems like common sense. So what we find, for example, with apps and social media in general, if we find people are starting to give tips and suggestions and ideas about what to do to break up like the sedentary, we call it sedentary lifestyle in medicine,
yes,
then it can be active. A lot of people, I know when I am on social media, I'll put out reminders, I call them pause for wellness, and it'll remind people to say, hey, when's the last time you stood up? When's the last time you stretched? Many people will use apps or go to other sites that actively give them suggestions about what to do, how to monitor maybe their eating, stress management. So there are lots of different things that you can use your screen time these days. It's not just TV anymore.
Now, many people in the developed world, at least, have a mobile device, don't they? Mm-hmm. So you're using that to combat disease in your practice. How do you do that?
Well, yes. Well, I actually retired my white coat and stethoscope, so I actually have a non-clinical practice, which is great. So I want to reach the masses, and I use my voice and I use education to really get out there and teach people what to do to create a healthy lifestyle. And a big part of that is social media. It's not a fad. I think when it first started, depending on your age, some people thought social media was going to be a fad. And we're seeing that it's really becoming part of our culture. Businesses are using social media to contact their customers. And now within medicine, we're finding that more and more people are starting to use social media or figure out how to use social media to promote healthy lifestyles. And that's what I do. I do a big part of that, educating people, but in an engaging way. You know, it's not the same as being in the office and you're sitting there in that little paper gown and you're nervous and you may be hearing every other word. On social media, people do it on their own time, on their own turf, and they're more comfortable, and we can engage them, still offering the same information about what to do to be healthy. For example, mindful eating, reminding people, hey, you know, take a breath, or are you really hungry? I mean, we can do a variety of things. And that's how a lot of people are now using social media for healthy lifestyles.
So how often are you sending out messages to your community, shall we say?
It's fun. I've had diehard social media people, because social media is a huge business now. So by traditional standards, I probably could be doing it more. I do it depending on the site. I maybe once or twice a day for more active times, or if I'm doing something like now, I'm at the Lifestyle Medicine Conference. I'm sending out posts because there's so much good information. And I'm sending a lot of information, one, to educate, but it also has the dual purpose of modeling behavior, healthy behaviors, letting people know, even though I'm still sitting here learning, I can still share with other people. You know, it's not just taking in passive information. I'm being active in soliciting the encouraging other people to also learn.
So you're being more aware yourself because you now see yourself as a role model.
Yes.
And a conduit of information. And then you're also creating information.
Right.
So it's really being active. And you're doing this full time now?
Well, not the social media piece, but the health promotion, that is my business now. That's what I do. I look at it as a practicing medicine in a different type of way. My medical roots are as a community pediatrician. And as many community pediatricians, by day we are in the office, and by night we're often talking to some group, you know, whether it's a PTA group or a scout group, teaching how to be healthy, essentially. And what I do now is I do that part as my business because that's my passion. I'm on a mission to help everyone live the healthy lives that I believe we're born to live. And I want to do it, sometimes it's a little slow, one person at a time in the office. But when I take the same teaching, the same message, and present it in a different way, I can reach more people, especially with social media. It's global.
And have you seen an impact?
I have. I mean, I can only go by anecdotal information in my particular case as far as people sharing information with me or feedback. But if people do reach out a lot. Oh, thank you so much. Even at the conferences where I speak, just last week I gave a talk, and it was a talk, one of my standard talks, I'd say, about how to create wellness your way and walking people through picking goals and what healthy behaviors may be. And one woman came up to me afterwards, and she's a larger woman, and she said, thank you, you're the first doctor I've ever heard speak who made me feel like it was okay to be me. She said she was always very self-conscious about her weight, and usually when she heard doctors speak, she left feeling, whether they actively did it or not, she left feeling bad about herself and her weight as opposed to feeling empowered to do something.
So it's, are you still working one-on-one?
Yeah.
After the break, we'll be talking about how we can use the internet, apps, and social media to support us in making healthy choices. Stand by.
Fortress and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold.
So having made the change, what happened to Roland's health issues? Check this out.
Well, by being on a more natural diet, getting off of dairy and meat and that sort of thing.
No more irritable bowel.
No more irritable bowel.
No more trips to the hospital.
No more allergies.
You can work around horses and move hay.
I can move it. I don't have to put on masks and I don't have to take medications.
So we don't have any medications left in the house.
And I just feel better. And our daughter feels better. And that's just a wonderful way to live. I mean, some of the things that happened to you also is that you noticed skin differences, weight differences, all those sorts of things.
No more headaches.
And the other thing that occurred with us a lot is the colds and flu. So, like, if we do pick up a cold and flu, it's half the amount of time. I mean, we go through the symptoms faster, we flush out easier.
I do hear other people complain, and I wish I had as much energy as you.
You know, shoot, we have friends. I mean, we're in our 50s, and we have friends that no longer...
Take naps. We had to take naps.
We were taking naps in our 20s and 30s. We didn't
after church,
take,
you know, and you eat your food, and
we
then
didn't
you go,
take naps anymore.
Had the Sabbath nap. Now it's like, really?
Yeah, we got to get to Silver Falls, hike 6 or 7 miles, go mountain biking. We want to go play tennis, and all of our friends are going, well, let's just sit around the house and talk. And we don't want to do that. Let's go do something. So it's made a big difference in our lives.
It's been decades since we took naps.
I think we have more energy now in our 50s than we were having in our 30s and 40s, really.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So those are some of the benefits, and we have just enjoyed them so much that we really don't want to change. We just want to continue to go forward and live a healthier life.
Now that is a healthier life. No symptoms, no medications, energy to burn, and feeling younger all the time. Roland made the decision to change based on a little prompt from his doctor. Yet what a difference it's made to his life. Now there's a tension between giving health information in an individualized way versus sending it out in mass media format. However, I asked Dr. Hamilton if she has found that social media actually makes it feel a little bit more individualized.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. But I think that may be the art. You know, in medicine, we talk about the art and the science. That might be a bit of the art of social media. It is a general message, but finding a way to word it so that it impacts each person individually. And I think that's where... Physicians in particular, because we're trained to do that. I mean, we may give the same message, you know, hundreds of times in a week, but each time we speak with that patient, we have to present it in a way that resonates well with them. And I think that skill set I bring to my social media posts, it's because there's an art with the languaging and just knowing how to connect with people so that it resonates well with them.
Now, is there evidence starting to appear in the literature with regard to the impact that social media can have on health behaviors?
I believe it is. I will say that I'm not the best versed on that, but in the early stages, we are seeing definitely that people are turning to social media for information. And I would say on a very basic level, that's a good sign that people are now actively seeking information and often hopefully before they're sick. I think the majority of adults, actually it's about 80% of the adults who use the internet, they go online for health information. That's before they call their doctor even. And a lot of that is social media, maybe not traditional social media, meaning there's a small percentage that will actually go to maybe a particular networking forum. But if you think about social media in the sense of most online sites these days, there's some sort of a space for an interpersonal comment section, and it's a broader sense. And when you start to look at it, that in terms of a social network, that's huge. And that is where now the majority of adults will turn initially for their health information. And we do know that.
So it's that they take information from the medical professional behind that page, but then they look at other users of that site, look at their comments, interact with those other users.
Often, my hope is that they're going to medical sites. That's one of the things I encourage healthcare professionals to become active, because patients go on looking for information. Ideally, they're looking for it to come from a qualified health professional, but it might not. They basically may go to a site that someone speaks very authoritatively and they call themselves an expert. That's why it's so important for people who truly do have the expertise to put that information out there for patients to connect, because they're doing a search.
So if someone has already made a change,
Let's say they've changed their lifestyle. They've some aspect, whether it's that they've become more active or they're starting to eat more meals that are whole food, perhaps plant-based. Do you think social media or just apps can help them to maintain? Do you think it's more likely that they'll maintain if they've got that kind of support? Maybe not professional one-on-one support, but that kind of support.
I believe so. That's what some of the early literature is showing. For some, they're looking now at specific diseases, and we do know that we're seeing some good results with people who want to stop smoking with using apps. There's some new information coming out for diabetics to support, get a better habits maintaining or managing that disease using apps. So absolutely, I imagine as we start to broaden it, because you know how we are in medicine and science, we have to be very specific and look at this very specific case. But the trend is there. And ideally, we do get people from that early phase of thinking about changing to actually changing and having that success where they're really maintaining it. Yeah. Mm.
And I heard presented here at the conference that there are apps to help girls remember to take their contraceptive pill or to remind women to do their breast exams. Yeah. And so these apps are all pointing to things. Do you think, what's your opinion? Do you think we have medicalized healthy living too much and that we need to put that responsibility back onto people?
That's a good question. Yes and no. I think it's good in the sense that we are beginning to help everyone understand that healthy living is, I wouldn't say there's science behind it. It's not just feel good. It's not just a good idea. We can now prove that grandma was right. You know, it wasn't just an opinion. So in that way, I do think it's good that we're looking at it through the medical lens. But to your point, we have to find that balance between empowering our patients and giving them the tools to make the healthy changes. It's a fine act, a fine balancing act.
And do you think that, that social media or apps or interacting with them electronically, even emails, with the electronic health records, there are going to be access to email your doctor back and forth. Do you think this is going to actually give more power to the patient, more responsibility to the patient?
As with anything, it's the way it's done. You know, I think that because if you say the same thing electronically as you did in person and you weren't empowering your patients then, you're going to probably get the same effect. I think we know a lot about, we're starting to learn more about what works with health promotion, how to actually coach and support patients through the stages of change and how to maintain it. There is an art and there's a skill to it. It's not as simple as saying eat better and exercise. You know, one of the speakers said that if that was going to work, it would work. You know, we wouldn't say to an asthmatic, oh, suck it up and just start breathing. And we wouldn't say to if we know better, we wouldn't say to a depressed person, oh, just snap out of it. It's the same with healthy lifestyle skills, even though they seem common. They're only common if that's what you grew up with, you know, and until then they're not common. We do have to teach people and encourage them to want to do it.
I hope today's show has inspired you to interest yourself in the care of your body, in a proper diet, and in the cause and prevention of disease. If so, then Go Healthy for Good is part of Thomas Edison's dream, and it's also turning screen time into a positive force for good. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.